For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show. And I'm Tim Fuel, back with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. A final weekly look for the season from me as I head into hibernation to plan for next season. But still plenty to round up this week before we go, which I'm trying to do with the help of Matt Badcock of the Non-League Football Paper. There's more managerial movement, club allocation debates, and awards galore. Much to come then. Sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. Time again to head on over to Non-League Paper Tower to welcome back once again to the Non-League Football Show, editor at large at the Non-League Paper, Mr. Matt Badcock. Welcome back, Matt.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Quieter than normal, shall we say, today. We'll come on to get to these escapades. But yeah, it seems to have been a long day this Thursday. But big news. We come to the back end of the week, and big news to start with, I guess, is the general election. That's going to sort of happen maybe even before we get the fixtures out. How's that for timing? But effectively, it means that the new bill intending to introduce the new football regulator that we've spoken and heard so much about is likely to run out of time, and we're going to have to wait and see if it's then reintroduced into the next parliament. And one thing we don't like in football is uncertainty. We look like we were making progress.
Yeah, I think, as you say, there was kind of a little bit of debate or question mark over whether they could push through, wouldn't it? But I think there's some sort of fair game. I had a conference on Tuesday, didn't they? And I think there's some question marks they've got over it, and there's things they want sort of slightly tweaked and changed anyway. So possibly this gives a little window to help that. But again, as you say, uncertainty up in the air and kind of what's gonna happen. And, you know, it won't be, it'll be interesting to see, you know, if it gets talked about much during these election campaigns, or focus on lots of other things that are obviously very important as well. So it'll be interesting what does happen now, but possibly there could be some tweaks and changes that people are looking to try and make anyway.
Yeah, is an opportunity to read through your work again before you finally submit it. So, as a journalism tutor, maybe I should point that out. Sometimes, though, time, having too much time, it probably isn't a good thing. Southend United, new twist since we last went to air, where with a new transfer embargo put in place on the club. There were fans protesting outside the Southend Civic Centre on Monday when I think the new leader of the council was appointed. I think the council have met as a committee on Tuesday discussing some of the implications of the Southend deal with... we've got the property deal that is involved there. The latest winding up hearing was postponed until, I think, the last week of June, which is their next court appearance. I think the consortium that have agreed to buy the club but still haven't got any sort of ownership or anything have pumped something like £3.4 million into the club to help with expenses and things like that, but technically still own nothing until that deal's concluded. The final sort of delay is this due diligence that the council were having to conduct in respect of a related property deal, which is all very important to the takeover. And we did see the new leader of the Southend Council, Daniel Cowan, put out a statement on Thursday afternoon, basically setting out three options as the way things are going to proceed, basically saying that they can't rush it because there's, you know, taxpayers' money's involved in it, but they are trying to do all they can. I guess the big question still, though, is National League AGM, I think, 8th of June. One wonders if it's going to be resolved before then, and if not, what further repercussions might follow?
Yeah, it kind of does feel a bit up against it, doesn't it, from that point of view? And again, it's the fans that are suffering. Mm. There's all this uncertainty. You know, obviously, Kev Mayer is as well. With recruitment generally, you know, it's going to affect it if you're talking to players and there's this kind of question mark around. Everything that's sort of going on, just generally, you know, a player might think, well, I'm going to opt for another club because that would be, it's kind of a safer bet kind of thing. But, you know, I guess it's been one of these sagas that's been running on for so long. It seems, you know, another twist here and there. It was kind of almost sort of expected in a funny way because it's just been such a difficult thing for all involved. And, you just hope that it can be something can be sorted as quickly as possible, and then any sort of, you know, doubts around it can be put to bed, as you say, before the AGM, and the National League have the answers they need. And, you know, I think last year the National League showed they were quite willing to do all they can to make sure that they start the season and everything, which they obviously did. So yeah, and you kind of hope that all those kind of things can be resolved, because it is going to be difficult when it is, you know, we see it in football, in those sort of football terms that you're dealing with, as you say, councils and taxpayers' money and things like that, that kind of don't operate on the same timescale sometimes. But yeah, it seems there's a lot of people are trying to push it in the right direction, and they've got a lot of support, you know, the MP and stuff like that, haven't they? So.
Yeah, I sense from sort of, you know, looking at all the statements that people are putting out and that sort of thing, there's no one there trying to block it, but it is, you know, everybody's, it's the CYA, that, as I call it, the cover your arse stuff. Everybody that's involved in this transaction needs to do everything right by the people that they've got the commitments to. So, you know, anybody that's ever bought a house knows that it looks like a nice, straightforward procedure, and it should be easy. And it, you know, in 2 weeks you should be in that house. But you know what we've got here, I think, is a deal for building hundreds of houses, and or maybe more than that. You know, multi-million pound deal, and I guess they just have to make sure that all those I's and T's are dotted, and there's nothing that's going to jump out at a later date. Again, you want things done quickly, but you don't want to rush it.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? So there could be, if anything sort of goes wrong down the line, then that's going to, you know, whatever way it is, it's going to come back, isn't it? So, yeah, very tricky situation. And like I say, just feeling for the fans, who kind of felt, you know, it felt like it was, just sort of feel like there's a kind of, when it first got announced and the takeover was going through, and there's, you know, kind of from the wider sort of public, it was like, oh, great. And then everyone kind of moves on, and maybe some people sort of kind of forgotten about it, just sort of assume that the club have been sort of saved. You know, we talk about their season last year, and with all everything that went on, the fact that if without that point of action, they would have finished in the playoffs, just showed what a good job everybody did down there on to get the results, and Kev Mayer and his staff and his squad did. So they just want that fighting chance, I guess, to attack the National League next season on a much more sort of sound footing. And, you know, the way that they've been performing with everything that's been going on, you can imagine if it is all sorted, and they you know, how the sky's the limit for them, kind of thing. Could they go and kind of end this non-league exile and get back into the football league?
And again, go back to that thing. One thing we don't like in football is uncertainty. It just creates, you know, added difficulties, doesn't it? I mean, in recent weeks, we've been trying to follow the Eastern Counties playoffs with delays due to the ineligible player for Thetford Town. Now all that's resolved, as are the playoffs. Thetford obviously beaten in their replay semi-final by Barton Wanderers last week, and in turn then lost at the weekend in the final. So congratulations to Newmarket Town for that win, promotion to Step 4 and into the Isthmian North. And we know it's the Isthmian North from the draft allocations that are in. We got those out, what was that, Friday early afternoon. A few clubs suggesting they might appeal, but in general, I think they were well received, and clubs are just happy that they can now begin to plan for the new season ahead, because we don't like uncertainty in football.
Well, this is it. And you say our draft provisional allocation, so those all need to be ratified, and there are appeals going in, as there are every year. It'd be interesting how many of those are successful or not. And then that will give us the final placings as we get to, you know, from those AGMs in the coming week. So again, a little bit of a process to get through, but generally speaking, most clubs will now know where they can be. And so before, I think, you know, as soon as the final whistle goes on the final day of the season, if you haven't got anything to pay for on the playoffs, everyone starts saying, right, where are we going to be next season? Those sort of clubs that can be on the peripheries and things like that, different ones. You know, some know exactly where they'll be all the time, but there's a few who are never quite sure. So now that they can have a better idea, they can get planning, get signing players, and start looking forward to the new season. Then everyone will be asking when the fixtures are out.
Yeah, I mean, you say most clubs know where they're going to be. I one of these mad thoughts that I have on my various drives up and down the M3 is that there must be someone clever, far cleverer than me, out there that can put together a moving map. It reminds me of my love for tectonic plates when I was doing my A-level geography. The leagues, how the league boundaries have moved over time. I'd love to see an animation as to how that's changed. It will just say so much about the strength of different clubs and different regions of football over time. Maybe I'm just weird.
I'd like to see that as well. I'd like to see a sort of shift in moving map. How it's all sort of changed down the years with the additions of the new divisions and things like that. So, you know, it's a great big piece of work generally anyway, isn't it? And you know, it's I think if I always, you know, acknowledge it, cause it's never going to be totally perfect. You're always going to have, you know, situations that aren't ideal, and that's because of the sort of shape of the country. And you know, scoring a goal in the last minute on the final day can change everything. Mm-hmm. Can change everything kind of across the country. It's but I think, yeah, you say there are some issues, some appeals going in and how they come out. But I think generally people, you know, no sort of major sort of like higher up the pyramid, I guess. You know, obviously Oxford City going into the North, Ash League North, was quite expected, really. Just don't see how it could have been anything else, really. So, especially with the clubs that have kind of gone down from it before and everything. So, hopefully get the appeals through and out of the way. Clubs can get heard who aren't happy. And then get through the AGMs, and then we can really start thinking about when those fixtures are going to come out and start planning for the new year.
Yeah,
I can't work out if it's, are we still in this season, last season,
what is next this, season, or is it next, this is it,
season,
isn't it?
Season?
I mean, you must have as many emails every day as I do from people asking when the fixtures are coming out, or those social media requests. When are the fixtures going? I'm not sure that this season's finished yet. I know there's still some football lower down still being played as well. But yeah, it's a while yet before we can even think about fixtures. You know, again, all these administrators, you say, well, we've got the AGMs. There's a lot of work that has to go into those AGMs, a lot of work that comes on the back of those AGMs, lots of forms for people involved at clubs to fill out before we can even get to that stage of planning for fixtures. But it will be fast upon us. It will be soon with us. And obviously, alongside allocations, promotions, etc., come discussions about ground grading. And it was interesting to see Marine, one of the more progressive clubs, I'd say, in recent years, some of the amazing projects they're doing up there. They announced plans this week for a new ground that could support EFL ambitions, basically, in terms of ground grading. Newly promoted to the National North, that sensibly they're planning for even further future progression. The idea, I think, will be to keep the existing Marine Travel Arena, formerly known as Rossett Park, with its, I think, the 3G pitch there is probably only a couple of years old, isn't it? They're going to keep that as a community hub. And the idea is to fund a second, a new home that's set up more. That other clubs are looking at, isn't it? It requires more fundraising, but with more clubs, with growing pathways, additional teams playing under their name, they require extra space. So it makes sense to have a second base, I guess. And maybe it might lead, this sort of a new way of thinking might lead to the end of tales of clubs selling their old grounds and then leading that nomadic lifestyle for years to come.
Yeah, exactly. As you say, clubs have been on such a rise over the last few years. You know, they've had a couple of promotions now, get up to the National League North, and, cup run during COVID, where I saw their cosy little ground with no fans in, which was obviously such a frustrating one for everybody concerned. But you can see how sort of intimate it is up there, and it's one on the sort of bucket list. A good friend of the paper, Barry Lenton, sort of regularly emailing in. He's writing a book now about Marines. He's emailing me about it today, and he's going through some proofreading of it. And such a club with such a rich sort of history, and it's good to see that they, as you say, they kind of got this vision and this plan, and hopefully they can get, always struck Strucker has been, you know, very sensitive and well run. So, you know, they can, you can sort of see where they're trying to get to. And I'm sure they'll do it the right way. That will really give the club the chance to carry on progressing. Cause, you know, Neil Young's been doing a brilliant, brilliant job on the pitch, and what an achievement it is for them to get up and be battling the National League North next season. And, I'm sure they'll be trying to upset the odds there again.
Indeed, indeed. And we, you know, obviously it's the end of the season, so you get various managers confirming their commitments to clubs from last season, but also lots of managerial moves. Busy all around, as you'd expect. Lots of new appointments, but, you know, clubs keen to get squads assembled, I guess, especially since the leagues and divisions have been sort of allocated on these draft allocations. Looking through the list, what have we got? Ian Selly's the new man at Leatherhead after departing Westfield, and at Westfield, the new joint managers are going to be stepping up from the playing side. Luke Elliott and Andy Crossley becoming the joint managers there, and sharing roles. It seems to be the common theme nowadays as well. A former Nap Hill duo, Jamie Daughtry and John Cook, they're the new men in at Hartley Whitney as co-managers. And up to Nap Hill go joint managers Mike Woolgett and Paul Johnson, who've done, you know, done so well in the last 8 years or so at Abbey Rangers. So we're sort of looking for a new challenge, a new opportunity there. And then we see lots of I don't want to call them old names. They're people that have sort of already ploughed a furrow in management, and now maybe coming back to the dugout. So we've seen a return to the dugout for Jamie Cureton, the new man in the dugout at Cambridge City. Justin Fevrier in at Chipstead. At Lewis, they've gone for Craig Nelson, most recently in charge at Glebe. And then just down the road, Ross McNeely takes up the vacant manager's job at Whitehawk. So some big names there coming back into management. And sometimes managers just had, you know, maybe a couple of months break coming in at the time of the season. So often we see them go on to be like some of the most successful managers come the end of the season next year.
Yeah, I just got off the phone to Ross McNeely. That's why I couldn't answer the phone a minute ago to you, Tim. I had to push you back. Speaking to Ross.
I'll allow Ross the privilege.
Sorry. You know, you never know these managers. Once you got a chance to get them, you got to speak to them. I know you'll always answer your phone, Tim. But yeah, and he's really excited about going in there and having, as you say, so, you know, that full pre-season now to get planning, get everything in place before they meet up in a month or so's time, and all the pre-season sort of friendly start going around. And it's interesting how different managers will sort of approach this sort of time of the year. Some will want to get all their business done before they go and sit on their sunbeds, and others will be happy to sort of be a bit more patient and kind of see what comes down the line, because, you know, the players that are trialling at clubs higher up through pre-season will sort of fall out near a kickoff. So it's kind of a bit of a juggling balancing act for many managers. But yeah, it's definitely that time of year, and everybody will start up again soon in pre-season with hopes of winning leagues and promotions and it being their year. And we usually forget that the hard work's going in now, and the phones and the WhatsApps are pinging around non-league as we speak.
It's not a day to go out with your phone half charged or without an additional phone charger if you're a manager this time of season. Again, some old names that coming back into the fold. Elsewhere, Dave Stringer is back this time at Step 5 Rugby Borough. Gary Haylock back managing this time at Beaconsfield Town. And David Noble back managing and back doing so at St Albans City.
Yeah, sort of obviously left last season to go to Wealdstone, and you know, just unfortunately, just for everybody, it just didn't quite work out. And obviously left for the end of the season, Sam Cox took over and managed to get the results they needed. And that sort of crazy last week, we had about a game every 25 minutes, I think it was, to sort of to stay up and get their survival. But yeah, it's just unfortunate for David Noble, who was doing such a good job at St Albans, and that's why he was kind of targeted and identified in the first place. He obviously took them to the playoff final the year before. They lost to Oxford City, but I guess it's kind of one of those go back where you get back in your old chair and try and repeat where you know, get back on the path that you're on and get the club you know fighting out for promotion again, because that's obviously where St Albans want to be. They want to be trying to push and getting out of that division.
Yeah, it is always good to get the band back together, and we did just that this week. The National Game Awards this week, hosted by your good self at AFC Wimbledon. I also learned that, like any good journalist, you can keep a secret perfectly well, with my own surprise.
Can't think what you mean, Tim.
No,
can't think
what you mean. Which I'm very, very thankful and appreciative.
What happened?
I've got a nice bit of glassware which rolled across the floor slightly at the train station on the way home, but it's perfectly all intact.
Oh, right, it was going to fall out of the bottom of that box in the pub, actually, but managed to save it there. But Tim, we felt, you know, for someone you champion non-league football so much, and you are such a supporter of what we do, but just the game in general, and you try and do everything you do. You know, this very show that you, I know you've sort of interviewed us from a beach and from your car and all this sort of thing, and you take your stuff away with you, and you know, you just felt you deserved a bit of recognition and a pat on the back, mate. And all you do, your club as well, driving up and down the motorway, and you know, that's what non-league's about, people like yourself. And I know you don't like the credit and the pat on the back, and you'd rather it go elsewhere, but sorry, mate, we had to keep that one from you.
As I say, it was fully appreciated, and even with my post-presentation interview, it was a fantastic day for non-league football, and it's just a multitude of characters, isn't it, that make it such a great thing to be involved in. Of course, you're going to no doubt have full coverage of all the winners in this weekend's paper, but I wanted to make a special mention to the final presentation on the day to a true non-league legend. You know, someone that I've known probably as long as I've been involved in writing about non-league. James Wright is a name probably every listener has read a multitude of times, whether it's in the paper, over the years as a non-league fan, but they probably can't remember why. It's not because he's not memorable or that his work's unremarkable. It's because his work has probably become, it's almost part of the furnishings of non-league that we just all take for granted. The non-league football handbook, as I say, the well-crafted results section of the non-league paper. He's the man to thank for all of that, but he's also bowing out of the top and retiring.
Yes, as you say, James Wright, who he does all the... I think, as I said yesterday, people say to me, how do you get that paper? I can't get all those results in the back. How do you get them all? How do you get them all in there? You know, kind of it's all the step five, six and below, and Scottish stuff. And that's all done by step five and below. It's all done by James. My simple answer is, I don't really know how he does it. Honestly, I don't know how he does it, because he gets it across every single week. Honestly, you don't even think about it. It just comes. We tell him how many pages he's got to fill, and it comes over every single week, every single Saturday, on time, without fail. He has never missed a Saturday in his 24-plus years of doing it. Literally never missed one. Not even to sort of go to a wedding or anything like that. He's just always been there, files it across, and to do that for so long, you know, it's just unbelievable. And sadly, he is stepping down and moving away. Although we'll sort of keep a bit of a handle. I think we'll go out and do some games down in down where he lives. So he won't be sort of disappearing at all from that point of view. But he is sort of passing the baton on from a results point of view. And it's kind of, you know, I read the paper before I worked for the paper, and again, it's something you didn't even think about. You like literally don't think about it. Oh, there's the results. You look in there, and you see what's what, and have a look at the tables. You don't think about how it all does get pulled together, and it is a remarkable effort. And we're really sad that James is retiring, but he wants to go out and enjoy some Saturdays as well, and get out and watch more football and all that kind of thing. So. And fair play to him. So, yeah, really. Again, as we said, yesterday was about celebrating all sorts of people from non-league, from the top to the club, to the managers, players, and the people, and the people that make non-league so so special. And that was why it was nice to have you, like yourself and James and many others there in the room yesterday.
Yeah, he is a true non-league legend. I've got a feeling he was probably one of the first email addresses I ever used on a regular basis as a sort of a young cub non-league reporter, and it was a similar ilk back then. What we were doing when you had to ring around for results from various club bars so that you could note them down. It wasn't all available on this internet thing,
that Twitter thing didn't even exist when I was started the paper, and it was kind of that ringing the bar and hoping somebody picked up. But James, I think he's going to do write a piece for us in the sort of coming weeks, where he'll sort of talk about how things have changed over the years and how he's kind of done it, and waiting on faxes to come through and all that kind of thing. So that'll be interesting for sure.
Very interesting. And celebrating that in non-league game stats, I thought I'd share some of these. First up from John Trelevan's post on the Non-League Matters forum regarding the playoffs at steps 1-6. And I love all this stuff. That apparently there were 144 playoff games, which brought in a total of 183,229 fans at the end of the season, with an average playoff game attendance of 1,272. There were 46 finals, the total attendances of 84,115, and a whopping 1,829 average attendance of all those all-important promotion-deciding matches. And nearly 30% of those were decided on penalties. And then we say about the playoffs, are they worthwhile? Well, we've heard the attendances there. Of those promoted from the playoffs, 16 clubs had finished second in the final table. 15 had been third. 5 had finished 4th, 8 were 5th, 1 was a 6th place finisher, and a special mention to Brislington, who got promoted to the Western League Premier via their Division 1 playoff, having finished 7th in their final table. All pretty impressive stuff, not only for the stats compiled and the people pulling all those together, but I think that the bright light it puts on the non-league game, nearly 200,000 extra fans at those extra games, suggests that the playoffs might work.
I think it's just non-league football works as well, and it's how many people do love it and get out and watch games, and that's what we always said it's about, isn't it? Getting out and feeling it, smelling it, and touching it, and kind of just being there and being watching that live sport, and where you're really part of something, and those stats are brilliant. The playoffs are built for drama, and they obviously bring people out, which is great to see. And I think the addition of step five this year, and step 5 and 6 has been really good, and that's just added so much more to those divisions as well, and kind of opened it up and given people stuff to fight for when seasons have often been so kind of just petered out. Now there's lots to play for in those final weeks, and that just goes to show that it captures the imagination. It's great to see.
Yeah, I mean, playoffs are wonderful. But also, I guess we're all here for the standard league season. And some impressive stats, again, from at Non-League HQ on Twitter, again, across steps 1-6. This time, in terms of the normal season games, but there were some 18,795 games played and registered amongst these stats. 8,458 were home wins, 6,839 were away wins, and 3,498 were draws. So it sounds a fair spread across there. Those games created nearly 66 goals for non-league fans across the season. Again, incredible stats highlighting, I think, the depth of the non-league game.
Yeah, I think it's quite easy to forget how deep it is and how many games are being played every year. What a remarkable effort. It's kind of it's such a unique thing. You think on a Saturday morning you kind of take a sort of bird's eye view across the country, and all these sort of cars and coaches and all going around all over different places to different patches of grass, wherever they may be, and we all, whether you're playing on it, refereeing on it, standing around it and watching it, we're all there because we love the game, and it's an amazing kind of movement, really, and just such a special part of this sport in this country.
Talking about a special part of this sport in this country, I'm going to take a little break for the summer, but you guys will continue, I guess, to produce high quality
newspaper. I'm coming with you, Tim.
All right. I'll get a bigger suitcase. You can far from the beach. But yeah, I just wanted to remind everybody that, you do put out a newspaper throughout the summer, week in, week out, for us to stay entertained and informed. All very much appreciated by all of us. I just wanted to say thanks once again for all your help this season and previous seasons. Have a great summer, and we'll speak to you again very soon.
We'll speak soon, Tim. Well done, mate. Another great season, and we'll see you on the other side. But yes, we're still out all through the summer. There's always something going on in non-league, isn't there? Be plenty to talk about. So have a good summer, and we'll catch you in the new season.
And that's it then for this week, and indeed this season. Unless a big story breaks across, needing our attention, of course, during the summer. Before I go, though, I thought I'd leave you with some insight from two of the managers who've made the headlines this season for non-league. From interviews captured with them this week at the non-league paper's National Game Awards. First up, George Ellacobe, the Maidstone manager. George, everybody else has gone off on holiday. What's it like to be a non-league manager?
Well, it's full on. It's no different to being a Premier League manager, because how we see it is the environment, the structure, it's continuous. You have to keep evolving and you have to keep improving as a football club.
And we've seen over the past year, in particular with the FA Cup run, the thing that you instill in your players is this community spirit, a family. Have you got players now wanting to come and play for you this season?
I think so. With what obviously we've created as a community, why wouldn't the player want to be part of that going forward? And so it's important, obviously, if we can pay them the right wages that they demand, that's because that's a big part of it as well. And then we provide a platform for them to be able to be the best version of themselves. Then they can be a part of something special at Maidstone United Football Club. But yeah, definitely is definitely attracted attention, and players want to be a part of something special down at Maidstone. But again, it always comes down to negotiation, and if we can manage to get players to come and play for us and be a part of something special, to be a part of a fantastic community down at Maidstone, then we are happy.
I know I've always wanted to play for you. How does George Ellacobe relax?
I'm really calm. I'm calm. How do I relax? I've got the right balance in life. Never too high, never too low. But the most important thing is to inspire players, when they are not just players, the people that I work with in terms of my management team, and the external staff, like the grounds people. It's important that you inspire everyone to be the best version of themselves, to make them believe even more. So, you know, it's about getting that right balance, making sure you're never too high in victories and never too high in defeats, and have that respect for every environment you go to, whether it's at the Gallagher Stadium or it's away at an away ground.
And flying the non-league nest, Bromley's Andy Woodman. Andy, sign off from non-league. I don't suppose you're going to be a stranger next season, though, because working to budgets, and you know the talent that's available at non-league.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've enjoyed working in non-league for this period. I won't be sad to be getting out of it, because we all know how hard it is to get out of the league. But also, I won't, forget that where it all started for me and how quickly you can be back there. And I will be going to a lot of games, because like you say, the budget restraints that I'm probably going to be under, and obviously the talent in the league. You know, there's some really good players in this league that probably a lot of clubs probably don't tap into as much. So as much as I'm probably signing off in your words, I'm still going to be very much involved.
And a room full of people involved in non-league for years, events like this are vital, aren't they, for football?
I've had a contrast in 24 hours. I went to the LMA dinner last night, which was the higher end of the football pyramid, as we work in. and I've had today's event here hosted by, you know, the non-league paper, and it really brings it home to you of what I've been involved in. You know, people that do it generally for the love and the desire of their little football club, their community, and their own little tribal group, as I'd call it. And it's really been quite nice today. Humbling, very humbling. And I've enjoyed every moment with it, and no doubt I'll be back at some point.
Don't forget, you can follow us and get involved on social media at Non-League Show. Myself there at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L. And as ever, throughout the season, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Player FM, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, via your smart speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your summer, enjoy your football. Thank you, and goodbye.